Hare Krishna. I request some of the devotees to please move forward a little bit so that devotees who come later can have access. Hare Krishna. So we've been speaking about some pastimes of Lord Ramachandra and his devotees. And the theme has been gratitude and compassion, which are found in perfection in the Supreme Lord Himself, and therefore also in His devotees. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains the nature of the Supreme Lord. Nature means svabhava. Ishvara svabhav bhaktir na loy aparad, alpa seva bahumani atma paryanta prasad. The meaning of this is that the nature of the Supreme Lord is such that he neglects, he overlooks the offenses that may be committed by his devotees. Instead, if the devotee renders even a little bit of service, then the Lord becomes so grateful for that service that He is willing to even completely sell Himself, even give Himself up to His devotee. That is the nature of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Ye yatha mam prapadyante, tam stathaiva bhajamyam. Mama vartmanu vartante manushyah partha sarvashah. He says that as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So whichever mood and whichever mindset in which we approach the Lord for whatever purpose, then the Lord reciprocates with that mood, with that mindset. In this way, whether one is opposed to the Lord or whether one is favorable to the Lord, everyone walks on the path of the Lord. The only difference is some walk towards Him, some walk against in the opposite direction. So those who walk in the opposite direction, that road leads to the lower conditions, to the more miserable conditions of life. The road that leads towards Krishna takes us to higher and higher destinations, and ultimately to the Supreme Lord's shelter in His holy abode. Now this is a general principle, but this principle breaks down when the devotional service of the devotee becomes so super excellent, so unparalleled, that the Lord finds Himself inadequate, incapable of reciprocating with that devotee's devotional service. Such is the power of a devotee. And as we all know, the greatest devotees are the gopis of Vrindavan. When Krishna saw the devotional service of the residents of Vrindavan, and especially the gopis, He became struck with wonder. And He spoke a very famous verse. Na parayeham niravadya samyujan svasadhu krityam vibudhayushapivaha yama bhajan durjara geha shrinkhala samvrishchitatva pratiyatu sadhuna. One of the very famous verses of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In this, Lord Krishna tells the gopis, Yaha ma bhajan. Those, that is yourselves, you have been worshipping a bhajan, you have been worshipping me, ma. And how have you been worshipping me? Niravadya samyujam, without any duplicity, with a completely pure heart. And durjara geha shrinkhala samvrishya. Geha shrinkhala, geha means the house or the home or the family attachments. Shrinkhala refers to the chains or the bondage. And Durjara indicates that these bonds of family attachment are extremely difficult to break. But the gopis, they samvrishya, they cut off those bonds. They broke those bonds of family life, which are very difficult to otherwise break. So they did their service in such a manner that Krishna was the only object of their concern. And therefore, Krishna becomes so grateful and so obliged to the devotional service of the gopis. He says, Na parayeham svasadhu krityam. Na parayeham means I am not able to, I am not capable of what? Svasadhu krityam, of paying you the compensation for your devotional service. Meaning that I am unable to reciprocate with your devotional service. So potent, so powerful, and so exalted is your seva. And vibhudha, ayusha api, even for the lifetime of the demigods including Brahma, if I were to try to repay you for your devotional service, I will not be able to do it. Therefore, tadvaha pratiyatu sadhuna. So all I can say is that let your acts, let your service itself be the compensation or the reciprocation for the service itself. Meaning there's nothing I can give you. You're glorious just because of that service. So glorious is the devotional service of exalted devotees like this. So glorious is the devotional service of the gopis that Krishna feels himself bankrupt. I have nothing more to give. So this is the transcendental nature of the relationship between the Lord and the devotees. We find this at its pinnacle in Vrindavan Leela. And of course we also find it in all the other pastimes of the Lord. And we have been discussing this in the pastimes of Lord Ram for the last few days. For those of you who were here yesterday, you will remember that we were speaking about Jatayu, the great devotee of the Lord in the form of a vulture, and also at the later part about his brother Sampati, who rendered such valuable service to the Lord. So at the end we saw how the Lord cremated Jatayu and became extremely grateful and proclaimed to Lakshman that he was more grief-stricken at the sacrifice made by Jatayu and his consequent death than he was at the kidnapping of his own wife. So this is the nature of the gratitude that Lord Ram had for Jatayu. So after cremating him and mourning for him for a certain while, then Ram and Lakshman proceeded southwards because they had a job to do. They had to look for Sita Devi. And as they went further, they encountered a fierce demoness, a Rakshasi called Ayonmukhi, who also was decapitated, but she was harmed. Her Lakshman was forced to cut off her nose and ears and so on because she was trying to assault Lakshman in an amorous way. And then they went on and they met a very fierce demon, the likes of which they had never seen. This demon was huge, but the body was very unique because he had no legs and he had no head. There was just a torso. And in the torso there were eyes and there was a big mouth. And he was very, very vicious. So the moment he saw these two coming, the two princes coming, Ram and Lakshman, he immediately grabbed them because his hands were very large and very long. And then he was so powerful that he could hold Ram and Lakshman there. And Lakshman and Ram were looking at each other and lamenting their plight. And Lakshman was saying, "This is our last day. Now we will not be able to live anymore. This demon is too powerful for us." And Ram said, "Don't worry. We will definitely emerge victorious. Cut off this demon's arm." So when the demon heard that, he wanted to eat Ram and Lakshman, and he was going to put them towards his stomach, which was in his belly, his mouth, which was in his belly. At that time, Lakshman and Ram each cut off one hand of the demon, and he fell to the ground. No one had ever been able to do that to him before. So he inquired in astonishment, "Who are you?" And then Lakshman introduced himself and his brother and said, "Here is Lord Ram, the son of Maharaj Dasharath, and I am his younger brother and servant, Lakshman. And we are here because we were driven out. Ram was driven out of the kingdom because of some political intrigue. And now his wife has been kidnapped by a demon called Ravana." And then Ram began speaking and said, "I do not know what this Ravana looks like or where he lives. I have only heard his name uttered by others. So we are searching for him." And the moment this demon, whose name was Kabandha, heard this, he proclaimed with great joy, "Actually, you are my savior, O Ram." And then he went on to narrate the history of his own form, or how he happened to take on a form that was so hideous like this. And he said, "I had performed austerity for a long time, and I pleased Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma gave me a benediction that I desired, that I would live a very long life. And I became proud because of that. And one day I attacked Indra, the king of the demigods. And Indra threw his thunderbolt weapon at me, because of which my feet, my legs, and my head went into my torso. And then I begged Indra to kill me and not leave me in this pitiable condition. And Indra replied that you have been given a long lease of life by the benediction of Brahma. So it is not proper for me to change that. I have to respect the word of Brahma. At the same time," he said, "since you are asking for forgiveness and you have taken shelter of me, I prophesy that in the future the Supreme Lord Ram will come. And along with his younger brother, he will cut off your arms. And the moment he cuts off your arms, you will be delivered. And then you will go back to your original destination. And you will have to guide them further." And then Kabandha said, "Later, I also happened to offend a great sage. And that sage also cursed me. And he said, when I begged forgiveness from him, the same thing he confirmed what Indra had said. And he said that you should tell them where Ram would find Sita. And that I would be delivered, my life would become perfect the moment I was cremated by Ram and Lakshman." So he said, "I plead before you, O Ram, kindly cremate my body, because then I will attain perfection. And after I have resumed or revived my original heavenly body, I will explain to you the further course of action that you may take." So then finally they cremated him, and it was quite a sight, because he was a huge body. Imagine if you burn tons and tons of vegetable fat or animal fat, what kind of fire and smoke would come out. So in any case, they did that, and then immediately from the fire arose a very beautiful heavenly form, bedecked with garlands, heavenly garlands and ornaments. And it declared, my dear Ram and Lakshman, Sita has been carried away by Lakshman. And now the time has come for you to make a pact of friendship with Sugriva, who lives in the Rishyamukha mountain in Kishkindha. He is also similarly aggrieved as you are. So please go southwards. And before you reach Rishyamukha mountain, you will come across a place of heavenly beauty, which is called Pampa Sarovar, the Pampa Lake. Therein is the ashram of the sage Matanga, who has long since ascended to the spiritual world, and so have many of his disciples. But one female ascetic disciple of the sage continues to live there, and she is awaiting your arrival because she is your great devotee. So please go and give your causeless mercy to her. And then after that, please proceed ahead. And Sugriva, who is the king of the monkeys, resides on top of that hill. And he has also been deprived of his kingdom. So you would both help each other. Sugriva is a person of great generosity, intelligence, and capability. So it will be an appropriate friendship for you. And then he departed to the higher planets. So then Ram and Lakshman proceeded ahead. And as they went ahead, the seasons changed. Spring season came. With the coming of spring, the climate was just nice. The forest around looked very beautiful. And Lord Ram began to again remember Sita Devi. And he was lamenting because the sight of the forest in all its beauty and the very pleasant weather reignited his lamentation and his memories of Sita Devi. And Lakshman had to use all his arguments, skill of arguments and his skills at pacification to give solace to Lord Ram. And so he proceeded. Eventually they went up and they came to Pampa Sarovar. But before at Pampa Sarovar, they met Shabari, the ascetic, the female ascetic that Kabandha had referred to. She had been waiting for a long time for Lord Ram. And there are many pastimes associated with Shabari, especially the one that she was so overjoyed to see Lord Ram, and she naturally couldn't cook the kind of things that we eat here, grains and milk and so on. She was living in the forest. So all she had was roots and berries and fruits available in the forest. And there were some berries which she wanted to present to Lord Ram and Lakshman. But she didn't know whether the berries were sweet or not. So she didn't want to offer berries that were sour or bitter. So before she offered the berries, she tasted the berries. Now generally when you offer, not generally, always, when you offer food to the Supreme Lord, you're not supposed to eat before that. Not only are you not supposed to eat, you're not even supposed to think about eating it. So therefore our cooks also have to be very careful. Actually, when you cook, you don't feel like eating. It's others. So when people look on and they say, oh my God, samosa, how I wish I could eat that. So that's not a good thing. So therefore, from the altar, from the kitchen of the deity to the altar, the bhoga is covered with a cloth so that no one can see it. Because it's natural that when you see some food, you feel like eating it. Sometimes if you're hungry, your mouth starts watering. So, but in this case, Shabari, she not only offered him the food directly, but she ate every berry. And she threw away those berries that were not sweet and only preserved those berries that were sweet. And Lakshman was aghast, but Ram very happily accepted this offering. So here we see another quality of the Lord, which is Bhava Grahi Janardana. Bhava means the mood of devotion. Grahi means one who accepts. Janardana refers to Krishna, the Supreme Lord. So the Supreme Lord sees the mood, the devotion of the devotee. And he saw Shabari's devotion, which was completely pure, flawless, without any trace of deception. It was completely spontaneous, it was deep. And he accepted that very happily. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati tadaham bhaktyupaharitam ashnami prayatatmanah. Krishna says, if one offers me a leaf, a fruit, a flower or some water with devotion, I will accept it because it has been offered with devotion. It is a love that the Supreme Lord accepts in our offerings. The Lord, as Srila Prabhupada explains many times, is not wanting in respect of food or any other thing. He only seeks our devotion. So in the forest, what else did Shabari have? She only had fruits and berries. So with great devotion, she offered this to Lord Ram. Actually, this pastime does not appear in the Valmiki Ramayana, but it is one of those pastimes that have been handed down from day to day. Nobody really knows where and how this pastime originated, but because it is in keeping with the mood of devotion, it is not contradictory, therefore we may accept it, there is no problem. Generally, the Valmiki Ramayana is our standard for accepting what happened and what did not happen actually in Ramlila, or anything about Lord Ram and his devotees. So in any case, Shabari, having served Lord Ram and Lakshman to her heart's content, now offered a prayer to the Lord and said, I had only been waiting here for you. Everyone else living in the ashram have all departed for the higher planets. So she entered into the fire, and right from the fire immediately she came up in her celestial form, and she rose into the sky. So Lakshman and Ram stayed at Pampa Sarovar for some time. And I would recommend that for those of you who go to India next time, if you are in South India, if you have time, you can go to Hampi. Hampi is a very famous tourist place also. And near Hampi is this Pampa Sarovar. And also you have many other pastime places associated with Lord Ram in that area, because Lord Ram stayed there for more than 4 months. The birthplace of Hanuman, the place Kishkindha where Vali ruled, and many other where Lord Ram, Sita and Lakshman stayed in those 4 months. Shabari's place, the lake, everything is still there. So remember the name Hampi. So anyway, then they moved on. And as they were moving, they approached the Rishimukha mountain, on top of which was residing Sugriva, along with some of his associates, the chief amongst whom was Hanuman. When Sugriva saw from a distance these two tigers among men, you know, approaching, he was struck with fear, terror in his heart. And he told Hanuman, who are these people? They must be Vali's spies. And Hanuman said, you know, you're acting just like a monkey. A monkey is very fickle, and he comes to a very quick conclusion about something, and then when he thinks deeper, he realizes that that conclusion was wrong. So why do you jump to conclusions like this? He said, no, just see. They are dressed as ascetics, but they don't look like ascetics. So Hanuman, you please go. And go as my emissary, and find out who they are. And mind you, glorify me to them, so that you can observe their expressions. And when you glorify me, if you see a negative expression on their face, then you know that they are inimical to me. If there is a favorable expression on their face, then you know that they have come as friends. Despite Hanuman trying to offer solace to Sugriva, still he was agitated. He was jumping from mountain top to mountain top. And anyway, Hanuman changed his form as an ascetic, as a brahmana, and he came in front of Ram and Lakshman. Now Hanuman was endowed with all yogic powers, as was Sugriva. You see, these were not ordinary monkeys. They were the sons of the demigods. Sugriva was the son of the sun god. Hanuman was the son of the wind god, Vayudev. So they had all these powers. So Hanuman changed his form and he came in front of Ram and Lakshman. And he began to speak extremely sweetly and eloquently. He says, "My name is Hanuman, and I am the assistant of Sugriva, and we live on the top of the Rishimukha mountain. And who are you, O great souls, who have come here? You are dressed like ascetics and you have matted locks of hair, but from your appearance and your demeanor and the way you walk, I can understand that you are not ascetics, that you are great warriors." So Hanuman spoke at length. He was expecting Ram and Lakshman to speak, but they weren't responding. So Hanuman was very carefully looking and wondering, why is it that they are not speaking anything? And perhaps it was because Rama is a king, he would study others. Because a person in the field of politics or diplomacy, they will always want to study and see others. When someone comes with a proposal, you want to judge the person, you want to gauge that person. So perhaps in times of risk and danger and uncertainty, one has to judge. So perhaps Ram was trying to gauge Hanuman's bona fides, whether he was a genuine well-wisher or whether he was an enemy. So Hanuman spoke for a while. And then Ram concluded that this person is genuine. As an aside, he spoke to Lakshman and he said, "Lakshman, this Hanuman seems to be an exceptionally qualified and educated person. He's not ordinary. Just look at the way he was speaking. As he was speaking, there was such conformity, such uniformity in his voice, in his intelligence, in his heart. They were all synchronized. It was all harmonious. See his sweet expressions, his mellifluous tone of voice, his intonation, his pronunciation, his choice of words, his construction of the sentences, his facial expression as he was speaking, and his body language, his demeanor. Everything indicates a very high level of culture and knowledge and education. This is not an ordinary person. So Lakshman, just talk to Hanuman and see." So Lakshman then introduced himself and his brother Ram. And he said, "We are the sons of King Dasharath. And we have been driven away. My elder brother Ram has been driven away from the kingdom. And as we wandered in the forest, the demon Ravana kidnapped Lord Ram's wife Sita Devi, and we were told by a demon called Kabandha that Ram and I should come here and strike a pact of friendship with Sugriva, who is your master as well. So we have come here for this purpose." So looking at Lakshman's face, which was full of grief, Hanuman also became very joyous, and he said, "Definitely, it is Sugriva who will definitely also help you. Sugriva is in an identical situation as you, because his older brother Vali has not only banished him from the kingdom, but he has also taken his wife. So therefore Vali here, Sugriva resides here in Rishimukha mountain. So it will be a very appropriate friendship, and with great joy Hanuman then resumed his original form as a gigantic monkey. He placed Ram and Lakshman on his shoulders, and with one leap he came to Rishyamukha mountain where Sugriva was waiting. He initially kept them there and then went in private to meet Sugriva to tell them the report that these are favorable people. This is Ram and Lakshman, the great sons of King Dasharath, and they have come in a friendly spirit. Then Sugriva's suspicions and doubts were pacified. Then he came forward and he said, "Yes, I'm very happy to meet you, and we will certainly strike a pact of friendship." And there and then they embraced, and Lakshman lit a sacred fire, and Ram and Sugriva clasped hands, and they circumambulated the fire, and the agreement of friendship was formalized. And Sugriva said, "From now on, O Ram, your happiness is my happiness, your sorrow is my sorrow, and vice versa. And I will do everything in my power, with my entire, with whatever is available to me, to ensure that Sita Devi comes back to you. At the same time, I am now helpless because my elder brother Vali has banished me from the kingdom. So I need your help to recover my kingdom and my wife." So Hanuman agreed. But Sugriva was not convinced. He said, "Vali is extremely powerful, and I do not know whether you are powerful enough to defeat Vali." So Ram said, "I will help you I will kill Vali myself this very day. But before that, please tell me the background of your enmity with your brother." So Sugriva began to narrate the whole episode. And he said, "Then Vali is my elder brother. Upon the passing away of our father, Vali ascended to the throne. And we were living happily. And I was the crown prince. One day, the son of Maya Danav, called Mayavi, came there challenging him to a fight. He came in the form of a buffalo. And he was so angry, Vali, that he came and he killed him there. He drove him away. And when he saw both myself and my brother coming out, he fled in fear and he went into a cave. At that time, Vali pursued him into the cave. And he told me, 'Sugriva, stand guard outside the gate or outside the mouth of the cave. I will be back as soon as I kill this demon, Mayavi.' And time passed. I was waiting at the mouth of the cave. An entire year passed, and I had not been able to hear anything or see anything inside the cave. Finally, after 1 year, I could see a lot of blood flowing out. I could hear some noises, some sounds, some screams, and they were not Vali's sounds. So I presumed that Vali had been killed by this demon. And so I took a big rock and I shut the face of the cave, the mouth of the cave, and I returned to Kishkindha. And everybody, all the citizens and the ministers, placed me on the throne when I told them of the circumstances. However, what had happened is that Vali had actually been victorious. He had taken a long time to find this demon. And when he came out, he tried to come out, he saw that the mouth of the cave had been blocked with a huge rock. He called out for Sugriva, but Sugriva was not there. So with his power, he broke open the rock, stormed into the Kishkindha, went into the court and admonished Sugriva very severely. Sugriva fell down at Vali's feet, but Vali was not pacified. And Vali concluded that this was a ploy on the part of Sugriva. He felt that Sugriva deliberately did this so that he could sit on the throne. and he drove him away from the kingdom. And Sugriva fled for his life. And once again, Vali was the king. But this time he also took away Sugriva's queen. And why did Sugriva feel secure on the top of the Rishyamukha mountain? So he explains that history to Lord Ram as well. And he says that there was once a great demon called Dundubhi. This Dundubhi demon came. He was very proud, very arrogant. And he would challenge the ocean, he would challenge the Himalayas for fight. And they always said, "We are not qualified to fight you. The only person who can fight you is Vali. So go and fight Vali and you will meet your match." So then Dundubhi came there. He stormed into Kishkindha. When Vali heard this, he came out enraged. And he caught this demon and he whirled him around and smashed him to the ground. And a very fierce battle ensued between the two of them. Finally, Vali killed Dundubhi. And he caught him by the hind legs and threw him into the air. And his body flew several kilometers away. But along the way, the blood from the body of this demon started dripping everywhere. As the body was flying through the sky, it was like raining blood at different places. And many drops of blood also happened to fall into an ashram of the sage Matanga, the same Matanga who was the spiritual master of Shabari. So when Matanga saw this, he was enraged. "Who has done such a stupid thing as to shower blood into my ashram like this?" And then by his mystic power, he understood that this was the work of Vali. So he cursed Vali that if you ever come within 6 kilometers of my ashram, you will die. And if any of your ministers dare to come in the vicinity of my ashram, they will be turned into statues for thousands of years. So therefore, Vali, somehow or the other, understood about this curse. He begged forgiveness from the sage, but the sage did not relent. And therefore, Vali would never go near Rishyamukha mountain. He stayed away. And that is why this was the only place where Sugriva was safe from Vali. So Vali was so extraordinarily powerful, it is described in the Uttarakhanda, the last canto of the Ramayana, Valmiki Ramayana, that one day Ravana attacked Vali. This was way before. This was way before the kidnapping of Sita, of course. And Ravana crept up from behind as Vali was sitting on the bank of the southern sea. Vali saw him out of the corner of his eyes. And as soon as Ravana was nearby, he whirled around and quickly caught Ravana's neck and held it under his armpit. And calmly continued with his prayers, all the while holding Ravana's head, neck under his armpit. And then he had to finish his Gayatri mantras and everything, whatever he had to do, and all the four corners and all the four oceans. So from the southern he went to the eastern, the northern, the western, and then he came back, by which time he was tired. All the time he was carrying Ravana with him. And once Vali came back to Kishkindha, by this time Ravana was really dazed. So Ravana was impressed and he offered his hand of friendship to Vali, which Vali accepted. So this was the history of Ravana. I beg your pardon, of Vali. So Vali was so powerful. So even though Sugriva, just by looking at Ram and Lakshman, could understand that they were very strong, still he had a doubt. Will he be able to kill Vali, who was so strong? So then Lakshman smiled, because he knew the power of Lord Ram. He said, what do you want him to do to prove his prowess? What is it that will convince you that Lord Ram is capable enough and strong enough to be able to defeat Vali and restore your kingdom and wife to you? He said, okay, first of all, let him throw the dead body, the carcass of Dundubhi, that demon who had been killed by Vali. Let him throw this carcass many miles away. And also Vali had penetrated with seven arrows these seven trees, sal trees. So let Ram penetrate even one of these trees with one arrow. So Ram smiled, and effortlessly with the toe of his lotus foot, he flicked the dead body of Dundubhi, which flew away to many, many miles away. And Sugriva said, not convinced. Still not possible to say whether Ram or Vali is stronger, because when Vali threw the dead body of Dundubhi, he was alive, he had just died, his body was full of flesh and blood and everything, but now his body is dried up, so it's much lighter. So it's much easier for him to flick, to throw the body of Dundubhi away. Then Ram again took out an arrow from his quiver, and he shot it into the first of the seven sal trees. The arrow went through the tree, the first tree, into the second, out of the second, into the third, out from the third, and it penetrated all those seven trees, one after the other, that one arrow, and then it went into the earth, went all the way to the lowest planetary system, Patala Loka, and then came all the way back and entered into the quiver of Lord Ram. The whole process took 1 hour. And when Sugriva saw this, he was struck with wonder. And he understood that yes, Lord Ram is capable and strong enough. So then Ram said, let us go. So you fight with Vali, you call out for him, go outside the gates of Kishkindha, call him outside, and when you both fight, then I will shoot him with my arrow. So Vali agreed, so Sugriva agreed. And he went outside the gates of Kishkindha and began roaring and challenging Vali. And Vali heard this, he was enraged. So he came running out. And then a fierce bout ensued between Vali and Sugriva. But Vali was too powerful. Sugriva was becoming weak. And he had blood all over his body. And he was waiting for Ram to shoot, but Ram was not shooting. Ram was waiting behind the trees, where Vali could not see him. And finally, when Sugriva realized that he was losing, and if he stayed on in this fight, he would be killed, certainly. So he fled. And Vali called out loudly to him and said, oh, you coward, this time I'm sparing you. And then Sugriva came back running to Lord Ram later and said, what have you done? He reproached him. It's because of you. Why didn't you tell me earlier that you wouldn't kill Vali? It's based on your promise that I went, and then you just didn't kill him. So Ram said, I'm really sorry about this, but you see, both of you look identical. And I could not understand who is who. And I was afraid that by mistake I might shoot you instead of Vali. And you were whirling around so fast, and your faces, you looked exactly similar. So then Ram asked Lakshman, there is this creeper called Gajapushpi. So make a necklace out of it and put it on the neck of Sugriva so I can identify who he is. And then he told Sugriva, go back again. And Sugriva said, all right. So he went and again started loudly challenged Vali. Vali was again even more enraged. And as he was about to come out, his wife Tara cautioned him. She said, no, there's some problem here. How is it that after having been beaten so badly by you, Sugriva is coming back to fight with you after such a short time interval? It means that he has somebody very strong with him. So please do not go. Make peace with Sugriva. He is your brother after all. Declare him the crown prince. In this way, you will make peace not only with him, but also with Ram, who is under whose support he has done this. Because Angad was a son of Vali. So Angad's spies had come back with a report that Sugriva had struck a pact of friendship with Ram and Lakshman, who were very, very powerful human beings. So Vali replied to his wife. He said, "What have I to fear from Ram? I have not done him any harm. He is not my enemy. He is a virtuous Kshatriya. And this fight is between me and my brother. It has nothing to do with Ram. So why would he intervene?" So he went out anyway. And again they began to fight. And this time Ram understood who was Vali and who was Sugriva. So he shot an arrow. It hit Vali straight in the body and he fell down. Now, he had a certain necklace of gold that had been presented to him by Indra. And till such time as he was wearing that necklace, he would not die. So he was injured fatally, but his life affairs weren't about to leave his body. But he lay there on the ground, completely defeated. And then he saw Ram emerge from the bushes. And he looked at Ram and he began to reprimand him. And said, "Fie upon you, O Ram. I heard so many nice things about your bravery and about your virtue. Where has your dharma gone now? How is it that you as a Kshatriya are fighting against me from a hidden place without revealing yourself to me when I am fighting with a third person? Because this is against the codes of Kshatriya warfare. And in any case, I have not done any harm to you. I have not attacked you or your kingdom. I have not even harmed your kingdom or your residence. So how is it that you are doing this? And you're killing me from a hidden place. This is an act of a coward." So Vali went on speaking like this. And then Ram smiled and said, "Vali, you are a monkey and you are not aware of the laws of morality. The laws of dharma are very intricate. Now you are berating me for not following the laws of dharma. But actually, who is it that is not following the laws of dharma? Under which dharmic law are you permitted to kidnap the wife of your younger brother and take her as your wife, even when he is still living? Forcefully abducting the wife of your younger brother is a great sin on the level of abducting one's own daughter or sister and so on. And therefore by the laws of the scriptures, one is punishable with death. Oh dear Vali, I want you to know that I am the representative of the kings of the Ikshvaku dynasty." Interestingly, Ram didn't say, "I am the king of Ayodhya or king of the planet." He said, "I am representing the kings of the dynasty of Ikshvaku. Specifically, I am the servant of Bharat." And he said, "From time immemorial, it has been the duty and the responsibility of the dynasty of King Ikshvaku that we have dominion over the whole world, over the earth. And it is we who have been entrusted with the power and the responsibility to punish wrongdoers, to protect the innocent and to punish the wrongdoers. And because you are the wrongdoer, therefore you need to be punished with death." Actually, human society and any society is governed by certain laws. Therefore, it is the business of the kings, the heads of state, to protect the citizens and ensure that dharma prevails and that there is no injustice and exploitation for anyone. Every citizen should feel safe. So, therefore, it is our business, it is our job to do that. And therefore, there is no fault in what I have done. You have performed a greatly sinful act, and this is just punishment for you. So, and as we all know, the laws of karma, you know, they act. Regardless of who we are, whether big or small, sooner or later they come. Normally the laws of nature, laws of karma act through nature. There are various demigods in charge of various aspects of the universal administration. However, ultimately it is the Supreme Lord who is responsible for this. And it is He who imparts this power to the various demigods and other officers in the universal administration. But in some cases, the Lord may personally take on this job. And here was Lord Ram, who had come as a kshatriya, as a king. And it was he, not only as the king, but also as the Supreme Lord, who had every right and all the power to inflict due punishment upon wrongdoers. So Ram said, yes. So therefore, what I have done is completely in accordance with the laws of dharma. And secondly, O Vali, you should also know that you are a monkey and I am a kshatriya. And therefore, as a kshatriya, we are entitled to hunt. And hunting always takes place when we are further away and unseen from by the animal. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshman ki jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai. Therefore, there is no harm, there is no fault on my part, O Vali, in doing this. And still, if you are not convinced about what I said, I can still give you back your life. What do you say? And Vali at that time experienced a change of heart. His heart was completely transformed. And with great gratitude, he looked upon Ram and said, "My dear Ram, I completely understand what you're saying and I agree with it. It is indeed foolishness on my part to have berated you thus and to have found fault in what you have done. But the fact of the matter is that it is I who have been guilty. And therefore I beg forgiveness from you, and I also offer my gratitude to you for bringing me to my senses and for giving me the just punishment that I deserved." This was a remarkable transformation. And we can only imagine the scene there. Meanwhile, his wife, Tara, the other generals, they all came running out upon hearing of what had happened. And if you would like to know what happened when they all came there, what conversation, what dialogue happened there between Ram and Vali, what were the events that happened after this, then you will have to come tomorrow evening at the same time. So we will continue this narration tomorrow, because there are some other interesting aspects and points about this pastime of the killing of Vali that we will also discuss tomorrow. And finally, about what happens after that. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.